Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
Good morning. Welcome to the Monday edition of the Hoosier Report. Lee Kelly sitting in for Matt Dennison this morning. We'll be joining Matt in segment number four today. We'll talk about the McDonald's All-American game. Matt going to be there the next few days broadcasting from there, bringing us up to date on all of the goings-on down in the Atlanta area. We'll talk to him about that in segment four today. And in segment two, Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. Segment three, we'll find Chad Gilbert. And as I said, Matt Dennison in segment four. We'll have the headlines coming up here in just a moment. The schedule and lineup brought to you by Honey Baked Ham. Honey Baked Ham, Easter is fast approaching. And remember to call or stop by Honey Baked Ham in New Albany to order your ham or turkey breasts today. And by the way, mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison and get $1 off your box lunch at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Well, the Hoosier headlines coming up next and lots of things going on. We had the Indiana High School basketball state finals in four classes. We'll talk about that in just a moment. The final four making their way to San Antonio for the NCAA tournament. We've got the McDonald's All-American game coming up in Atlanta on all of the side things going on with that. We'll have our own Romeo Langford participating in a number of those. Matt Dennison will bring us up to date on that and a lot of other things coming up here this morning as well. We'll talk to Zach Osterman a little bit about IU basketball and the IU women's team. They're in the Final Four of the NIT as well. So lots of things going on. The Hoosier headlines brought to you by Hoopsters in your hometown sports grill where hometown fans watch hometown teams play. Let's get on with what's going on this morning here and see what we have for you. First of all, several local high school baseball teams trying to kick off the season this week, but doesn't look like it's going to be a good week for that to happen. Lots of rain in the forecast almost daily. Going to be very difficult for those teams to get underway here in the last part of March. We'll keep an eye on that for you. And, of course, Matt Dennison will keep you updated, especially on Thursdays when he will have interviews with players and coaches of the local high school baseball scene. Looking down our list here, Matt, let's see. Let's talk a little bit about March Madness, the Final Four, made up of two number one seeds, a number three and a number 11. And here's what else we have learned about that tournament. Well, a 98-year-old nun can steal the hearts and headlines of basketball crazy nation. We were finally allowed to see a 16 seed beat a number one seed in this year's March Madness. We know that one of the best engineering schools in the nation can't build a brace to repair a fractured elbow or a device to repair Boilermaker fans' hearts after the finish with Purdue this season. We suspect that that last-minute miss by Grayson Allen may have been the result of bad karma from all those tripping incidents over the last 4 years. We learned that teams featuring lots of freshmen, no matter how many stars are besides their names, won't beat a team with a lot of JRs and SRs beside their names. And to explain that point, Villanova, in their top six players by minutes, has one junior, three redshirt juniors, a redshirt sophomore, and a redshirt freshman. Kansas, two seniors, one junior, one redshirt sophomore, one sophomore and a freshman. Michigan has a fifth-year senior, a senior, two juniors and a sophomore, and Loyola, two seniors, a redshirt junior, one junior, and two freshmen leading them in minutes this season. Justin, FYI, Kansas has players from the Ukraine, Angola, and Nigeria. Michigan has a starting center from Berlin. Loyola has players from Croatia and Edmonton, Alberta. And Villanova has no foreigners, unless you count Tim Delaney. He's from New Jersey. That's about as close as it gets for the team from Villanova. We learned that maybe the SEC wasn't quite as strong as thought. Maybe more Loyolas should have been selected and less from the South. The SEC had eight teams selected. Just one made it to the Sweet 16, none to the Elite Eight and beyond. And if you're looking for an ACC in the Final Four, just keep right on looking. You'll find one Big Ten, one Big East, one Big 12, and one Missouri Valley. And so on March the 31st, April Fool's Eve at 6:09, Loyola of Chicago will meet the Michigan Wolverines, followed around 8:49 by Villanova and Kansas. Should be a fun weekend with the championship game 1 week from tonight. All of that coming around. We had some players from local ties that made the scene in the Major League spring training camps. Let's take a look at those on Saturday. New Albany Bulldog alum Josh Rogers picked up the save in the Yankees' 13-6 win over the Toronto Blue Jays. Rogers entered with two outs in the seventh and a runner on before retiring the side. He then worked the following two innings, giving up a hit, striking out one. He had four flyouts and a groundout while facing a total of eight batters. This was the second game that Josh had appeared for the parent Yankee club in this spring training. And we have another young man, the former Jeff Red Devil and U of L star Drew Ellis. Drew made eight plate appearances with the Arizona Diamondbacks this spring. Last year, Ellis appeared in 48 games in the shortened A-League season, hitting .227 with 41 hits, including eight doubles and eight home runs. That was in the A-Division League. The Hillsboro, Oregon Hops of the Northwest League is where he played. Fielding-wise, Drew had a total of 111 chances at third base last year with just one error. Off to good starts, and we'll be keeping track of those two young men as they progress up the ladder, hopefully making it to the major league clubs in the very near future. Let's see what else we have for you this morning. And let's see, All-American game, McDonald's All-American game scheduled to tip off Wednesday night, March the 28th. It'll be a 7 p.m. tip-off. It will follow the girls' McDonald's All-American game and will be aired live on ESPN. 24 players from across the country to compete, representing 17 states, including Indiana, represented by Romeo Langford. New Jersey leads the way with three players selected for the game. Georgia, Florida, North Carolina, Maryland, and Virginia had two each. Total of 24 players. As we said, two schools have two players scheduled to play. Hudson Catholic in Jersey City, New Jersey, and Oak Hill Academy, Mouth of Wilson, Virginia. The only uncommitted player still left that'll play in this game, Romeo Langford, E.J. Montgomery, and Jordan Brown. Those are the only players left in that list. And of the players committed so far or even signed, Duke leads the way with four future players on the roster, led by the Morgan Wooten Player of the Year, R.J. Barrett, Zion Williamson, Trey Jones, and Cam Reddish. They are all planning to play for Mike Krzyzewski and the Blue Devils. Kansas had three future players in the game. It will have three future players in the game: David McCormick, Quentin Grimes, and Devin Dotson in that game. And let me go back and find what I'm looking for here. Looking for the India. Here it is. Couldn't find the right notes. Indiana wrapped it all up on Saturday at Bankers Life Building in Indianapolis. And in the 4A game, Warren Central, the team that knocked New Albany off on a last-second shot a week ago, they finished the regular season undefeated at 32-0. They trailed by 4 points entering the fourth quarter. They ended up winning by six. The Warren Central team led by Dean Tate with 21. Carmel was led by John Michael Malloy with 21. But not many others showed up to help out for Carmel in that game. Warren Central finishes 32-0 on the year to win the 4A. Bossy of Evansville finished 25-5 on the year, but came up on the short end of a 64-49 loss to Culver Academies. Mickey Larry had 28 for Bossy. Culver had three players in double figures. On the 2A side, Forest Park trailed by just five entering the final period, but ended up losing 56-44 to an Oak Hill, Indiana team featuring three homeschoolers who started that game. The Rangers were led by freshman Kurt Hoff. 10 points on the game for that young man. And in 1A, if you're a fan of great offense, the 1A game would have been the one you should have watched on Saturday. Morristown looked very good at the Seymour Semi-State a week ago. That continued in the early morning championship game at Indy on Saturday, Morristown winning it 89-60 over Southwood. Morristown outscored Southwood in every period, had four players in double figures, and led by Eli Strievel with 35 points, including five three-pointers, won that game going away. So it ends for another year, but high school fans, it's only 8 months until the first tip-off of the season, when 404 schools all start out undefeated and with high expectations. And of course, high school and IU basketball never out of season here on the Hoosier Report. So that wraps it up. Today's liners brought to you by Hoopsters, your hometown sports grill, where hometown fans watch hometown teams play. Hoopsters was voted as best sports bar and best place to watch sports by the News and Tribune Reader's Choice Awards. Hoopsters in Jeffersonville, where fun happens. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star coming up in just a moment here on the Hoosier Report for Monday on WXVW 1450 and 96.1.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And welcome back to the Hoosier Report. Lee Kelly sitting in for Matt Dennison. We'll be talking with Matt in segment four of today's show. He's on his way to Atlanta to the McDonald's All-American game. Our next guest, Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. Good morning, Zach.
Hey, how we doing?
Not bad. A weekend of watching basketball. I'm practically blind, but other than that, I'm in very good spirits here this morning. Your take on the March Madness tournament so to this point in the tourney, Zach?
Yeah, I think it's been an interesting one. You know, obviously, it's kind of been a weird juxtaposition. There's been a lot of chalk on one side of the bracket. Yesterday, you had a 1-3 and a 1-2, whereas on the other side, you had Loyola playing Kansas State in the Elite Eight in Atlanta, and then you had, what, Michigan playing, I don't even remember, I think Florida State was a 9 seed, right? It just sort of felt like the two halves of the bracket that took dramatically different turns over, I guess, the first two weekends. But it, with the exception, obviously, of Loyola, which I think is a good team and certainly deserves to be in the Final Four, but I don't think you would have felt very surprised if I told you any of the other three teams there, Kansas, Villanova, or Michigan, would be in the Final Four when I, you know, if I'd said that before the tournament started. And I think you've obviously got some really good storylines going into San Antonio. You know, two coaches have won national championships and a third who's played for a national championship. So there's plenty of experience there. And now let's just see if the Loyola Magic keeps rolling into Texas.
Well, they've got Sister Jean on their side, and she's got people working on her endorsements, which I find utterly amazing. But you never know what storylines are going to come out of a tournament like this. There's always something, but this may have been the biggest sideline story in quite a few tournaments with what this, I started to say young lady, but that's not totally accurate. At 98, I'd love to think 98 was young, but not quite. But she certainly has seized the headlines and the stories in this tournament.
Yeah, I think I enjoyed, I think somebody asked her what she gave up for Lent, and she said losing. So it's hard to argue with the results to this point.
Let's take a look at this Purdue team. Had they been able to keep Haas healthy, what are the chances, in your opinion, that they might have been able to sneak into that Final Four?
You know, I wouldn't have been at all surprised to see them playing Villanova yesterday, first of all. And that's with all respect to Texas Tech. But I thought Purdue was the better team there if they were full strength. I think Matt Harms is a good-looking young player, but I just don't think anybody could replicate what Isaac Haas does. I'm not sure really there's anybody in college basketball this year that's kind of been as unusual of a matchup as Isaac Haas. And I'm not saying he was the most unstoppable player out there when he was healthy, but it's just how many teams realistically have a matchup for Haas and what he does and his physical presence surrounded by all of that sort of wing and guard talent that Purdue could put on the floor. And I think you just, when you're a team that relies, when your strength is that balanced, I guess, and you lose that, it's hard to adequately replace it, whether you have a week to do it or 2 weeks or 2 months. Could they have beaten Villanova? I think they certainly could have. I probably still would have favored Villanova going into that game. I picked Villanova before the tournament started as my national champion, so I clearly think, you know, they're going to beat everybody they play. But I think Purdue could have given Villanova a pretty tough game with a healthy Isaac Haas. You know, the thing with Purdue, it always felt a little bit like, even with Haas, either A, they needed the threes to go down, or B, they needed one of those perimeter players to really step up and complement Haas inside. And, you know, I think they probably missed the impact of Dakota Mathias, if I'm not mistaken. He was pretty quiet in that game. I think he finished with just something like the 3 points. Carson Edwards had 30, and if they'd had Haas, and you could have put Carson Edwards 30 points next to that, I think you probably could beat anybody. But you just, you felt more and more like this was a Purdue team, not unlike that 2010 team that lost Robbie Hummel late in the regular season, that this was a Purdue team that just wasn't going to be able to pick up all of the slack that losing a player like Haas was going to leave.
Our guest this morning, Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. And, Zach, I can't judge how good high school players are, let alone how good high school or college players are, let alone those that will make it in the NBA. But is Haas the type of player that will have a career, a good career, or a great career, in your opinion, in the NBA?
I would be surprised if he didn't get a shot somewhere. I think the question for Haas is just, you know, how does his body hold up and essentially how does his style fit? When you look at the NBA and you see how much more versatile big men are becoming, you know, to use an example, a player like Jaren Jackson at Michigan State, who statistically was probably the third or fourth best player on his team this year, but is also probably the best regarded NBA prospect of any of those players that Tom Izzo has in that current roster, because he can essentially, you know, realistically, as he gets stronger, he should be able to defend the center position in the NBA, but also handle the ball and shoot threes. And more what NBA teams are looking for in sort of the modern pace and space game is big men that can create those matchup problems, that can give you defense in a number of positions, but can also go inside, outside, and pull defenders around with them all over the floor. You know, Haas is in a lot of ways, I think, a traditional back-to-the-basket big man, you know, and I think he's so good at that. But you're also talking about somebody who probably isn't going to, you know, be able to stretch defenses in the same ways, probably isn't going to be able to defend, you know, let's say 3-4 positions in college. So how does he fit positionally? I think he could find a nice niche. Like I said, I would be pretty surprised if he did not get a long look in the NBA somewhere. But I think he's the kind of guy that probably, to me, he needs to find the right situation, the right system that really knows how to utilize and develop his skill set, because I think anymore in basketball, it's a pretty specific one. Whereas 20 years ago, you might have said, hey, Isaac Haas is just the next center, you know, up out of college basketball.
Zach Osterman of the Indy Star, our guest this morning, as we set in for Matt Dennison. Zach, the IU women, one of the bright things about basketball at IU this year, they're in the Final Four for the NIT or the WNIT and had a pretty good season. Is that a forerunner of better things to come, hopefully, for the IU women?
Well, I mean, it's I think, first and foremost, it's kind of a fun, I don't want to say fun, but it is probably a fitting send-off for Tyra Buss and Amanda Cahill, both of whom have been, they're both seniors. They've both been regulars their entire careers. Tyra Buss owns the IU women's scoring record now. You know, up to this point, they were central figures in maybe the most impressive IU women's season of all time when they went to the NCAA tournament a couple of years ago, played in the second round against Notre Dame. You know, if this ended with a WNIT title, I think it would be hard to imagine this not being the highlight for, in terms of team accomplishments for players like Tyra Buss and Amanda Cahill. I would imagine it's the kind of thing Indiana would put a banner up for in Assembly Hall. And so then you'd kind of be able to maybe leave something lasting for a couple of players who have, I mean, been kind of everything for Indiana over over the course of their careers, both on and off the floor. They're very active in the community. They're very popular with fans. They're very giving of their time to young fans, you know, at and after games and things like that. So I think that's probably the biggest thing is you know, fans hoping that this is kind of a fitting send-off. And for the program, I think what you like if you're Indiana is you've got 5 freshmen and a sophomore on your roster right now. You're also going to bring a couple of transfers eligible next season, and that's basically kind of, I think, how Indiana's going to try and navigate losing Tyra Buss and Amanda Cahill. Getting Brenna Wise, a transfer from Pitt, Allie Patberg, a transfer from Notre Dame, who's actually from Columbus. That'll kind of be the next wave, if you will. But I think right now everybody's kind of just focused on whether or not Indiana can end Tyra Buss's and Amanda Cahill's careers on such a high note.
And let's get back to IU basketball and football to kind of finish up with today. What's going on, first of all, in the basketball program? But during the tournament, almost everything takes a back seat at schools, especially those not involved in the tournament. But any information leaking out that would surprise, shock, or interest us out of the IU basketball program at the moment?
Yeah, what's funny is the answer is not really. It's actually really quite quiet around here. And in one respect, that's not too surprising. Again, as you said, if you're not in the NCAA tournament, late March is usually kind of not the hot business time of year for you. But this is the time of year where you would expect to hear about transfers and things like that. And there hasn't really been any kind of movement on that. There hasn't really even, frankly, been you know, a strong suggestion of a possibility with any certain player. And that's look, I'm not sitting here and saying nobody will transfer. Those would be famous last words. But as of right now, there's really just not a lot of chatter about any kind of player movement, which I think for Archie Miller, with or without Romeo Langford, would be really important this offseason, as Indiana is going to get a lot younger next year. That's actually something I'm writing about today. Indiana is going to go from a roster that's sort of headlined by five seniors right up to a roster that's only going to have one scholarship senior unless they take a graduate transfer next year, and nine or as many as nine, at least eight freshmen and sophomores. So it's really been kind of quiet. Obviously, you know, from a fan perspective, Indiana fans are all focused on Romeo Langford and his decision and whether or not he'll wind up at IU next year. But from a program perspective, it's all just kind of recruiting, starting to gear up for the spring. You know, spring off-season workouts will start here pretty soon. And it really is much quieter than I'd say it's normally been this time of year around the program.
And let's flip over to IU football. Anything going on with the Hoosier football program that gives us hope for the 2018 season, Zach?
Still just plowing through spring practice. And, you know, it's kind of one of those where there's a lot of position battles to watch in the spring. I'd say, you know, probably obviously quarterback, probably running back. Who's going to replace Simi Cobbs at wide receiver? And then you look to that defense where you lose a lot. You lose guys at every level, defensive ends, defensive tackles, both your linebackers, a couple of, you know, as much of a shutdown corner and Rashard Fant at Indiana has had in a long time, and some key players at safety. So it's kind of going to be, you know, you want to talk about all these position battles with coaches and players through the spring, and it gives you an idea of maybe who's moving to the front of the line. But then you also remember that after the spring game, these guys are going to go through an entire offseason, an entire summer of workouts and voluntary, you know, player-led stuff. They're going to get a freshman class in, then fall camp. So you sort of don't want to handicap too much, I guess. Probably one of the biggest questions for me, and it's not one that spring practice alone is going to answer, but Indiana's got three quarterbacks. Only one of them, Peyton Ramsey's got any snaps in college. And he's also a redshirt sophomore, a rising redshirt sophomore, the most experienced of the three years-wise. I wouldn't be surprised if coming out of spring we don't hear Indiana maybe linked with a couple of one or two graduate transfer quarterbacks, try to get a little bit more experienced at that position, somebody that could come in after the spring semester, work out with the team all summer, be around for fall camp, and maybe that at least provides a little bit more competition, or maybe it does give you a little bit of leeway to take it slower with a player like Michael Penix, who's a true freshman, enrolled in January after signing last December, not having to force such a young player into such a big role early on. That's probably one of the biggest things I'll be looking at through the end of spring.
Zach, thank you very much for joining us this morning, and thank you for joining us every Monday here on the Hoosier Report.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star with us this morning. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll talk with Chad Gilbert, the athletic director at Charlestown High School, get an update on the Indiana State Basketball Tournament. That's coming up here on the Big X, 1450 and 96.1 WXVW.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And welcome back to the Hoosier Report. Lee Kelly setting in for Matt Dennison this morning. Matter of fact, we're going to be talking to Matt here in just a few minutes in segment four today. Matt on his way to the McDonald's All-American game. And with us right now, Chad Gilbert, the athletic director at Charlestown High School. And Chad, welcome and good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
So far, so good. Did you make it up?
It's a wild day out here, the first day of high school baseball, opening day of high school baseball. What about then? It's snowing 9 inches. on Sunday and Saturday in Indianapolis. Crazy time of the year, spring in southern Indiana.
Unbelievable. Did you make it up to the state finals this weekend, Chad?
Absolutely, and it was a great time. Like I said, we walked down to the hotel, and there was probably an inch of snow on the ground. Came back in between sessions, walked back to the hotel, and I would guess there were probably 3 inches. So going back to the night sessions, walked back, and I would guess there were probably upwards of 7 to 8. It was just nonstop craziness. You know, for that time of the year, to have that much snow on the ground was unbelievable. But the games inside were magnificent. The morning games with the 1 and 2A teams, I think that was the best attendance they said they've had in the morning game since 2008. And it did not disappoint. Morristown put on an absolute clinic. And if you got to see it, they just really moved the ball well. They passed the ball. They were unselfish. They looked for the open man. And I think that's kind of been their MO all year, and that's why they've been successful. And, you know, that happens with a lot of teams. If you look at the way Bellarmine plays, or you look at the way the Golden State Warriors play, the teams that don't have a ball stopper, that dominate the ball, that pass the ball and look to get each other's shots, I think that one, that gets your team chemistry better, where the rebounders rebound, the defenders defend, and the shooters shoot. But two, you're turning down good shots for great, which then increases your field goal percentage. It gives you a better chance to win. So, you know, that's a great way to play, and I thought Morristown did that to the T.
Yeah, I saw Morristown at Seymour the week before and was very impressed with them then. Watched them Saturday morning, and I was even more impressed with them. They came in with a focus and got off to a good start and just never took their foot off the pedal. Put that game away and just stayed right on top of it. Very impressive performance by Morristown Saturday morning.
Right, and you know, the Morristown, their opponent, had 4,000 point scores on it, which is almost unheard of in high school basketball. And for Morristown to just put on a clinic is just nothing less than remarkable of how well they were coached and how unselfish those kids were.
Yeah, it was a fun day to watch the games on TV as well, and I didn't have to fight the snow. So it would have been more fun to be in Banker's Life, but not knowing that snow was outside and I had to get
right,
out of sometime. All right, let's talk. Go ahead.
The 2A game, real quick on that one, Oak Hill against Forest Park. Just a slugfest. Both teams were huge, and they kind of mirrored the way each other played. But, you know, look for Forest Park to be up there for quite a few years. You know, they've got a big freshman up there, or over there, who has good hands, good feet, and can do a lot of things. I think they've got a pretty good underclassman group coming up from the JV and freshman team. So I was excited for Coach Litherland. When I was at Perry Central, he was the freshman coach on our staff there. So it was exciting to see him have success, and I look for him to have a whole lot more success in the future.
That game had a situation. We talked about it a little bit last Thursday on here. Three homeschoolers on the team and starting for the Oak Hill team. Have any thoughts about that situation? Anything, you know, come out? Anything said Saturday up at the state finals?
You know, that's something that I think it kind of goes with how everybody has their own deal on it. Like our school system, we don't allow that. You know, you've got to be a member of the school to be, you know, you got to go to our school to be able to be part of members of the athletic teams. And that's something that, you know, I think that creates some pride with that. And it creates some insert. You know, it's almost like you're good enough to play in our team, but we're not good enough to educate you. And I think that's something, you know, that you may see more down the road type deals with that one. But it's something, you know, that is certainly an issue with kids coming. And I'm not knocking anybody that does that. Everyone has their right to do what they need to do. But to me, you know, I think it's more being part of the community, being part of the school, and being part of that success. It makes it more special for everyone involved.
Let's shift gears a little bit. Our guest, Chad Gilbert, athletic director at Charlestown. Chad, are you still in contact with Bruce Pearl, who coached you in college? You still contact?
Yeah, absolutely. We talked. You know, Coach Pearl's birthday was last week, and you know, we shot a few texts back and forth. That's not the birthday present he wanted from Clemson, but you know, the one thing on Coach Pearl is this year, the job that he did this year was nothing short of remarkable. He was coming in shorthanded anyway because two of his best players had to sit out this year. So to do what he did with the two best players out and give that run, you know, he was set to make a nice tournament run because, again, his team shot the ball well and they were unselfish with the ball. But then their center went out, broke his foot, and so that made it just tough to defend by the rim. So now instead of going two guys out, you're playing three guys out. So now instead of playing an eight-man rotation, you're looking at your 9th, 10th, 11th man. And there's a big drop-off in big-time basketball between someone's top six and their 9, 10, and 11. And I think that eventually caught Coach Pearl in the end.
Yeah, I think he's got one of the strongest alumni in Charles Barkley of any program in the country. Barkley really supports him. One thing that I heard a story about, and it came from Barkley and it came from Bruce Pearl, about a note he received from Barkley when he was coaching at Tennessee and how much it meant to him, actually brought him to tears during the interview that he was talking about. So a lot of things go on behind the scenes, I think, that we never hear about. Every once in a while, a story actually breaks through about a man like Bruce Pearl or a man like Charles Barkley, and when their paths cross somewhere along the way.
Yes, you know, and it's funny you say that about Charles Barkley and the Auburn deal. When Coach Pearl left Southern Indiana, he went to Milwaukee, Wisconsin up there, and the general manager of the Bucks at that time was Ernie Grunfeld. Well, you remember the Ernie and Bernie show down at Tennessee. Well, when the Tennessee job opened, Ernie is how he got down to Tennessee from that connection. So it was kind of like he worked it from that way to get Ernie to get him at Tennessee, and then, of course, Charles took note of it in the SEC, and Charles was a big player in that Auburn deal as well.
Yeah, it's fun. I've followed Bruce Pearl really because of you, because I knew he was your coach at Southern Indiana, so it was easy to kind of follow him along his path. I feel like I know him. I've never met him in my life, but because of just the reference to you, I've kind of followed him, and seems to be a very nice man, and I think he certainly has made the coaching staffs at the SEC level much improved with his expertise.
Oh, he's a competitor, and he'll get the best out of you, and he'll get the best out of the opponents, too, because no one wants to lose to him. And he'll make you feel like a million bucks. You know, he's someone you would love to be around because he's great. He's a great storyteller. He's a great motivator. And, you know, on top of everything else, he's a great coach.
You know, the one thing that always worries me about Bruce Pearl, I'm always afraid he's going to dehydrate right on the sidelines as much as that man perspires. And I sweat like crazy. I can relate to that, but that man has me beat, I believe.
Well, coaches like me, we're big guys. You know, I'm going 285 right now. Big guys like to sweat.
I understand. Chad, we're going to let you go. It was certainly a fun basketball season here in Southern Indiana. A lot of teams really had outstanding seasons, and now everybody's beginning to try to fit the puzzle pieces together for the 2018-19 season, and I think it's going to be another great year for basketball. Spring sports coming up, and there's some very talented baseball players and track stars and softball players coming up from our local high schools as well.
No question about it. You know, that it's a great time of year. And that's the one thing. You keep things in perspective. Basketball is always going to be great in Southern Indiana. You know, there's going to be a lot of parity. There's going to be a lot of good coaches and a lot of kids really leaving it all on the line. But basketball is not the only thing that's good in Southern Indiana. You know, I think there's spring sports, our track and softball, tennis, golf, baseball coming up. There's a lot of very good, talented athletes there, a lot of very good coaches that work really hard. So it's a great time of year, and we hope people keep coming out and supporting our young kids, and our young kids keep doing a great job of representing themselves, their community, family, and their schools. You know, it's a great time to play sports.
Absolutely. Chad Gilbert, thank you very much. We'll talk to you next Monday.
I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Okay. Chad Gilbert, athletic director at Charlestown High School, sharing with us some thoughts this morning. We'll be back. We'll talk with Matt Dennison en route to Atlanta, Georgia for the McDonald's All-American Games. That'll be coming up in segment 4 here on 1450 and 96.1 WXVW.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
You know, a basketball hero around here is treated like a god.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
You know, most people would kill to be treated like a god just for a few moments.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And welcome back to the Hoosier Report for a Monday. This is a first for me, I think. I don't think I've ever interviewed Matt Dennison before. We've known each other a long time, had him in class, but Matt, I think this is a first for me.
Yeah, I think so. We've been in a lot of broadcast situations together over the years, and I know I've had a lot of fun. So also, for those that don't know, Mr. Kelly, Lee Kelly, my radio television teacher at New Albany, so anytime I've ever made a mistake or misquoted something on the radio, I guess I can technically blame you since you were my teacher that taught me the trade, right?
Absolutely, and that's probably true. I probably forgot to tell you something or gave you the wrong information. Entirely possible.
Absolutely.
Matt, you're in the car. You're on the way to a very special event. Tell us a little bit about where you're headed.
Well, obviously the McDonald's All-American game is something that kind of sets the closure of the high school basketball season each year. It's not every year that you have a player from Southern Indiana, from our broadcast area, as one of the elite participants in the game. So this year's game, a little more special than others, although Indiana has a really rich tradition of sending some really good players to the game. So tonight is the Powerade Jam Fest. It's a slam dunk contest, a three-point contest, some other shooting contests as well. And then the games, the girls' game Wednesday night, followed by the boys' game also Wednesday night. Of course, Romeo Langford, the local player that I speak about that is in the game this year with a lot of extra excitement added to that. So should be a fun couple days for Romeo, for his family, and glad to be down here to see this myself.
Now, there's a dunk contest, there's a three-point shooting contest that are this week, but not necessarily, certainly not at the Phillips facility, but I believe at Morehouse College. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a historically black college in downtown Atlanta, so I'm looking forward to seeing that. Always a neat setup. It'll be on ESPN2, I believe, later this evening. And for Romeo, he was initially, it was said that he would probably shoot in the three-point contest. They have a boys and a girls contest. When I saw the latest schedule for tonight's activities, he was not listed as a contestant in the three-point contest tonight, not in the slam dunk contest either. He's listed as participating in the Legends and Stars shooting competition, which, to the best of my knowledge, it looks like they take a McDonald's All-American boy, they take a McDonald's All-American girl, then they put a former McDonald's All-American with them. So there's a team of three that I believe are competing together, and Romeo will participate in that. I don't know if it's all going to be on ESPN2 or if they're just going to show the finals of some of the competitions and hype up the games for Wednesday, or exactly how the format will look back on TV tonight. But we'll be here in the gym and looking forward to seeing it. And again, I know a lot of friends will be down here from across the country in basketball. So just a fun event. You know, it's been in Chicago for a number of years, and it's neat to see it in Atlanta. And I don't know if plans are to keep it here or if it's going to go back to Chicago. I know when they used to move it around, it actually was in Louisville at Freedom Hall one year. But one of the other things that I wanted to point out, you know, everybody gets excited for the dunk contest tonight. Zion Williamson's going to be in it, so he obviously is the favorite with some of the crazy dunks that he's had over his high school and AAU career. So that's exciting for tonight. The game obviously is the big deal. Everybody wants to see Romeo play, and I'm sure that he will, you know, play well and get a lot of opportunity to go play with and against some of the nation's best. But the real thing, and I really hadn't thought about this a lot, talking to some other people that are down here and either already here or on their way, one of the big deals to be selected for this game has nothing to do with the slam dunk contest, the jam fest tonight, has nothing to do with the game on Wednesday night. The closed practices, which I know they had a session yesterday, I think they have one session today, one session Tuesday, and I believe Wednesday before the game as well. But tons of NBA personnel will be here to watch some of these guys. And really, after this point, once these postseason All-Star games come to a close over the next 3 or 4 weeks, you know, they'll start looking ahead to the mock drafts for not this June, but the following June. So a lot of these evaluations could help or hurt any of these players, including Romeo Langford. So for the public, the game is obviously fun, and for the players, the game is a big honor to be selected to this McDonald's game. But it also means a lot for the players to get this opportunity to work with and against some of the country's best players in a setting where a lot of NBA personnel will be here. And I understand there was a big crowd on hand yesterday for the workout, and there will continue to be, I'm sure, over the next couple days before the game.
Matt Dennison, our guest here on the Matt Dennison Show. Couldn't wait to say that this morning, Matt. Just one final thing. Just before I went on the air today, somebody read me a quote about Romeo mentioning that depending on who got the job at U of L, it might be someone that he would like to have a conversation with before making a final decision. I haven't heard that anywhere else. Have you heard anything along those lines?
I haven't. I saw that Evan Daniels of 24/7 Sports, who is already down here at the McDonald's game, I know he had a story with Romeo last night, just kind of an update on his recruiting, and that he was really teasing the question about, you know, would Romeo consider Louisville at this late date. I have no answer to that. I haven't read Evan's story yet, and obviously that's been something that's been talked about on Louisville area sports radio, and just generally Louisville fans have been asking for the last couple of weeks, when it was pretty for sure that David Padgett would not be back as the permanent coach. You know, if they get Chris Mack from Xavier, or if they get a high-profile coach in there and they're able to do so before Romeo announces his decision, do you think Louisville could get back in the mix? And I have no idea. I would think it would be awful late at this point to make up ground, even if it's a coach that Romeo maybe has some previous dealings with or likes or is familiar with. You know, there's a lot of unknowns at Louisville for the next couple of years as far as with the investigations, you know, what when the federal investigation is done, what may the fallout be and penalties be from the NCAA. So, you know, Louisville at one time, I think, made a lot of sense with Rick Pitino there, you know, what that program is and how the fans support that program. But, you know, without knowing anything from Romeo, his family, or anything like that, no matter who the coach is, it just to me, there's a lot of unknowns at Louisville that would make it hard to consider them at this late date. But, you know, again, it's a local school. It's a school that Romeo and his family, I know, have visited many times and are familiar with, and crazy things sometimes can happen in recruiting. But my gut opinion, my feeling would be it would just be awful hard with the unknowns that could exist there.
Matt Dennison talking with us this morning here on the Hoosier Report. Matt on his way to Atlanta for the McDonald's All-American game, and he'll have his show live from Atlanta on both Tuesday and Wednesday. Matt, have a safe trip. We'll talk to you again later in the week.
Lee, thanks so much for hosting the show. I was listening on the way down I-24. You're doing a great job. And I don't know if Chad Gilbert mentioned it or not, but Chad Gilbert, a former McDonald's All-American coach, he got a chance to lead the girls' game after his state championship at Jeffersonville. So kind of great timing to have him on to start this week.
All right. Thank you, Matt. We're out of here. We're out of time. That's the Hoosier Report for this Monday.